Chabad Danurg Audio.
This lecture is presented by Rabbi Lezer Gurkov, rabbi at Congregation Beth Tfilah in London, Ontario.
To move on, of Hillel's school, there were 80 students that were considered significant to the point that they emulated Hillel in all of their ways. The Talmud tells us 30 of those students were as meritorious as Moshe Rabbeinu, meaning they were deserving of a revelation of God just as Moshe did. Only the rest of the generation wasn't deserving of having such revelations in their time. 30 others of this group of 80 were as deserving as Yehoshua, as Joshua, Moshe's pupil, who held up the sun in Givon so that the battle can continue until the Jews were victorious. And 20 others the Talmud calls Beinonim. They were simply average. The greatest of the group was Yonatan ben Uziel. He wrote a translation of the Torah in Palestinian Aramaic called Targum Yonatan. And the Talmud says of him that when he would study Torah, the angels would congregate. And if a bird would fly overhead, it would be singed from the heat of the spiritual energy that emanated around him during his Torah study. The least of the group was Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. He is the character we are about to discuss. Just so that you don't think little of Rabbi Yochanan, I'm going to list for you some of the areas of Torah that he has mastered according to the Talmud. He mastered all 24 books of the Tanakh, which we call the Bible. He mastered the entire Mishnah, all of the Halakha, all of the biblical exegesis and the principles of biblical exegesis, all of the Midrash. He was a master of astronomy, a master in numerology. He also was familiar with the language of angels and of demons, and even understood the language by which trees praise God. He was familiar with the mystical aspects of creation, and he was familiar with the mystical aspects of the constellation of angels. He was surely familiar with all of the discussions that were later documented in what became the Talmud. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was the least of these students, and this is what he said of his master Hillel. He said, if all of the skies in the world should be parchment, and all of the trees should be pens, and all of the oceans should be ink, I could not have written down the Torah I learned from my master Hillel. And I've only displaced from my master's Torah as much as a fly would displace from dipping its wings into the great ocean. Which gives you an idea of Hillel's mastery of Torah. It is interesting that Rabbi Eliezer, the student of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, said something very similar on his own deathbed when he said that I have studied a lot of Torah, but I have only displaced from my master's teachings, from Rabbi Yochanan's teachings, as much as a dog lapping at the ocean. And then in turn said, my students have only taken from me that much. And so we see that the degree of Torah knowledge by the admission of those very scholars receded from generation to generation. And if we know the greatness of Rabbi Akiva, we can only extrapolate from there the greatness of Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yochanan, and of Hillel. Finally, I want to point out that at one time, the sages gathered in Jericho, in Jericho, and a voice came from heaven saying, there is among you one person who is deserving of the revelation of God, of the Shekhinah. Only the generation is not prepared for it. And the sages all pointed to Hillel. Many years later, Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish, who was one of the central characters of the Babylonian, of the Palestinian Talmud, the Jerusalem Talmud, equated the achievements of Hillel with that of Ezra. And so, in terms of the testimonials toward Hillel, I mentioned Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai's testimonial that he could not have written the Torah that he studied from his master, and of course the Mishnah that testifies that there wasn't an area of Torah that Hillel did not master. So we move now to Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, as we learned before, was the youngest and the least of the students of Hillel. Despite the fact that Rabbi Yochanan was the youngest student, one might speculate and say the smallest means the most insignificant, Hillel thought very highly of him. Rabbi Yochanan was very careful. As he talked, he'd never talk about something that was tamei, but rather something that was not tahor. He never mentioned something was contaminated. He simply said it wasn't clean. So Hillel said, this student will one day become a great master of Torah and a decisor of halacha for Israel, because I see the sensitivity with which he regards the issues of Torah. When Hillel was on his deathbed, the students of Hillel gathered to visit. Hillel said, Aye HaKatan, where is the young one? Where is the little one? Rabbi Yochanan at that point was about 20 years old. Because as we mentioned before, Hillel passed away in 109. Rabbi Yochanan lived to see post the destruction of the temple, which was in the year 69. Rabbi Yochanan is a youngster, so he stayed outside. So they said to him, Ben Zakkai Bachutz. Rabbi Yochanan Ben Zakkai is outside. So Hillel said, tell him to come in, because he is Av Lechachma, the Av Ledorot. He is the father of wisdom and the father to generations. Well, that's a very heavy title to carry. The father of generations. Because we are the generations. We are the generations who have flowed from Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai's day. And he is our father. How does he justify the title of being the father to our generation's wisdom? But we will see that he lived up to that title in a very serious way. It is interesting to note that when he spoke to his students, he always referred to them as my sons. And so in that sense, he took his master's title very seriously. He was the father of generations. He was the youngest and therefore outlived all of his colleagues. And in that sense, felt driven to bring his master Hillel's teaching forward, because if he wouldn't, then who would? He couldn't rely on the next one. He was the last of the group. So he sought to teach Hillel's teachings and Hillel's way of life and Hillel's character, and bestowed that upon a nation that was growing more and more turbulent by the decade. At this point, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai lives through Pontius Pilate's execution of Jesus and the growth of the Hebrew Christian movement. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai lives to see the splintering of the Jewish community into so many different groups when they need to deal with the very serious question of how to respond to Roman pressure upon Israel. Do we succumb? Do we fight? Do we compromise? Do we resolve? There were hotheads. The Talmud calls them kitzonim. They were the radicals. They were baryonim and sikrikin. These were just simple bandits that made common cause with the radicals. There was the organized military under Agrippa, who was the Roman-sponsored king of the Jewish people at that time. And Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is looked to for spiritual and Torah guidance in this very difficult situation, and needs to impart the incredible value of humility in approaching a subject of immense proportions. This is a very difficult undertaking. After Hillel passed away, Rabbi Yochanan moved to a city called Arav. It's in the north. It's in the Galil. The Talmud, the Mishnah mentions two piskei dinim, two rules of halacha that were brought to Rabbi Yochanan, and he ruled upon the questions in Arav. But over the course of 18 years, only two questions were brought before him. So when he left Arav for Yerushalayim, he said, Galil, Galil, your hatred of Torah will ultimately be your demise. And indeed, as he foresaw, the Galil was the first region to fall to Rome in the Great War. Galil was under the leadership of Josephus, and Josephus immediately folded and allowed Rome to enter the Galil. In fact, Josephus went over to the other side and traveled through the land of Israel with Rome and later documented his recollections, which, of course, we always take with a grain of salt because we realize Josephus, and as much as he wanted to record the story as it truly happened, as a real historian would, he also had to ingratiate himself with his hosts, because in that atmosphere, if he didn't please his hosts, he might not live to see the publication of his own work. And so Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai moves to Yerushalayim, from Arav to Jerusalem. In Yerushalayim, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai builds an incredibly large following and establishes an academy that cannot be contained in any one building in all of Yerushalayim. He has no choice but to preach and to teach outdoors in the great square under the shade of the Temple Mount, Betzel HaHeichal, because the Temple Mount provided a great deal of shade on a great large square, and that's where Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai taught. There are many incredible stories that occurred in that yeshiva, in that academy. We'll discuss many of them next week when we have our all-night learning session on Shavuot, because Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yehoshua, these people came to Rabbi Yochanan and were formed as Torah scholars in this academy. Some of the greatest minds and the wealthiest people of Jerusalem learned with Rabbi Yochanan and studied with Rabbi Yochanan or under Rabbi Yochanan in that academy. Just briefly, from Jerusalem, he traveled to Yavne, where he established an academy in Yavne just before the destruction of the temple. And from Yavne, he moved to the Negev, to the south, to Bror Chayil. So over the course of his life, he traveled from the north of Israel, made his way down to the south of Israel, and that's where he passed away in Bror Chayil. He's not buried in the Negev, but that's where his last known residence was. So in Jerusalem, as we mentioned, he established the academy. Now, at that time, Rabbi Yochanan was not the Nasi. In fact, Hillel's son was Rabban Gamliel. He was the Nasi. And after Rabban Gamliel passed away, his son Shimon ben Gamliel was the Nasi. Rabbi Yochanan was a very important member of the Sanhedrin, the leading Jewish council of Halacha, the Supreme Court of Jewish law, but he wasn't the Nasi. The reason he was the primary teacher was A, because of his scholarship, and B, because of the political climate of that time. Rabban Gamliel, primarily his son, Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel, spent most of his time in hiding. It was the policy of Rome when they were engaged in war with the nation that they would target the leaders of the nation, hoping to destroy the morale of the people they were fighting. And so Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel spent most of his time in hiding, and according to our tradition, was in fact executed by Rome. His son Gamliel was also in danger of execution and also spent many years in hiding, but due to Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai's diplomacy, was saved, as we'll see shortly. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai devoted a lot of his time during his period in the Sanhedrin in Yerushalayim during the last 40 years before the destruction of the temple. So that takes us from the year 29 to the year 69. He devoted a lot of his energy during that time to debating the members of the Sanhedrin that were from the Tzedukim movement, the Sadducees. They had infiltrated the Sanhedrin because of their influence with Rome, and they tried to adjust the halacha in accordance with their view of Torah. The Sadducees only accepted the written text, and they refuted the oral tradition. And Rabbi Yochanan debated them on many occasions to demonstrate the truth of halacha and the oral tradition. The Talmud records many of these debates. They relate to many different issues. One of them is, for example, when the first day of the holiday of Shavuot is meant to fall. The Sadducees had opinions of their own. A very interesting story is told in the Talmud. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was a Kohen. He was of the priestly family and therefore was able to testify in the Mishnah about the last red heifer that was brought. And he was also able to testify about the exact dimensions of the high priest's garments. And the Midrash tells us that when that last red heifer was brought, the Kohen Gadol was a Sadducee. You may know by now that Roman procurators, and later Agrippa, before him Herod, sold the office of the high priesthood to the highest bidder. So often people of immoral character ascended to that office, and they often did not live to see did not survive Yom Kippur. They often enter the Holy of Holies, and because they were unworthy of the office, they would die in the Holy of Holies to be replaced by their deputy, by their subordinates. And sometimes there were Kohanim Gdolim that were very worthy, and sometimes there were Kohanim Gdolim that were very unworthy. And in this case, it was a Sadducee that had attained that office. And there was a difference between the Prushim and the Tzedukim, the rabbis and the Sadducees, with regard to a particular detail of the Para Aduma, the red heifer. The rabbis held, or were of the opinion, according to the tradition, that the Kohen that prepares the ashes of the red heifer need not be in a state of absolute purity. It's one of the great dichotomies and paradoxes that the Kohen that confers purity upon the impure need not be himself pure. The Tzedukim, of course, disputed this issue. And so the Kohen Gadol, in preparation of the red heifer, ensured that he went to the mikvah, he immersed himself in the ritual bath, and he was in a state of purity. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai approached the Kohen Gadol. He was permitted to approach. He was himself a Kohen. But he himself was in a state of impurity. And as you know, the ashes of the red heifer are prepared outside of the temple, which meant that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was permitted, even in a state of impurity, to approach the high priest. And he walked up to him and he said, "My master, the high priest," and he put his hand on his shoulder. And he said, it would behoove you to enter the mikvah. You have just become impure. And so, of course, he ran down and entered the mikvah, and he came back up, and he was angry. And he hissed between his teeth, and he said, "Yochanan, when I have a chance, I will get you yet." And Rabbi Yochanan says, "When you'll have a chance, we'll deal with it then." 3 days later, this Kohen Gadol passed away. So this is a story that's brought to demonstrate that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai even at times put his own life in jeopardy with those who were in a position of power in order to prove a point of the oral tradition. During the course of these 40 years, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai foresaw the destruction of the temple. The Talmud tells us the doors of the sanctuary would open and close of their own accord. Until Rabbi Yochanan stood up and he said, "Temple, temple, why do you frighten yourself? I already know that you will be destroyed, because the prophet has already prophesied that your doors will be burnt down in fire and that your house will go down in destruction." And at that point, the doors stopped opening and closing. And so he foresaw the destruction, and according to the tradition that he had been taught by Hillel, that a time would come when the temple would be destroyed. During the time that he was a member of the Sanhedrin, he was known as a great investigator of witnesses. Every witness that testified to an event was subject to Rabbi Yochanan's investigation. The Talmud teaches that at one point two witnesses came to testify that they had witnessed a murder under a date palm. Rabbi Yochanan asked them to describe the precise nature of the date palm and how thick the branches were. And so that's how far he went in protecting the integrity of the law to ensure that an innocent person not be put to death. Rabbi Yochanan, by his very nature, abhorred violence. He integrated the teachings of Hillel, of peace. Himself had many opportunities to teach and to preach the value of peace. He explained that the reason the Torah prohibits building the altar with any stone that was shaped through an implement of metal. He explained this because metal is the material from which swords are made, and swords are an instrument of death and destruction, while the altar is an instrument of peace, and an instrument of peace may not be shaped by an instrument of destruction. In a period of time when the prevailing attitude of most people on the street was that you had to fight Rome in order to gain the peace and the security for the Jewish people, this was a very courageous statement. And Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai reflected these kinds of teachings many, many times. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai lived in Jerusalem during the time of the Great War. And we are told that Vespasian sent an envoy to Jerusalem, and there's reason to suspect that the envoy was Josephus, because the recording in the Talmud very much parallels the Josephus' account. suggesting that as long as you submit to Rome, I need not destroy the city and burn your temple. Why do you insist on the temple being destroyed? The hotheads, the radicals, rejected the offer of peace and elected to go to war. Rabbi Yochanan convened the radicals and suggested vigorously that the offer be accepted, day after day after day, until he himself was threatened. As Vespasian had spies in the city of Jerusalem who used a very interesting method to communicate, they would send arrows with little messages taped to them, attached to them. And on that message, they sent information to Vespasian that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is a proponent of peace and would be a valued ally to have. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai met with his own nephew. It was his own nephew who was the leader of the Sicricon, the bandits. And he said to him, how long will you keep destroying the Jewish people? And when his nephew said, I agree with you, uncle, but if I turn on my people now, they'll have my head. Rabbi Yochanan suggested, according to one account, and a different account has it, that his nephew suggested an ingenious method by which Rabbi Yochanan might be able to escape the city and achieve what he called Hatzalah Porta, a minor salvation. By faking his own death, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was able to leave the city, and his students carried him out, because there was a prohibition, and there still is, against burying people within the limits of the ancient city of Jerusalem. That's not today's walled city, but the ancient city of Jerusalem. And so when Rabbi Yochanan faked his own death, his students carried him out. And once he exited the city, he appeared before Vespasian, who recognized him, and asked him what he might do for him. To make a long story short, Rabbi Yochanan gained the grace and the favor of the Roman general and asked him if he would spare Yavne, a small, out-of-the-way hamlet where he would like to simply build an academy so we can study our Torah and observe our mitzvahs unmolested. We have no war with you. Vespasian granted that. Just before he left, Rabbi Yochanan said, I have one more request to make. The family of Gamliel, they're in hiding. They know that your agents are looking for them. Spare that family, please. For the sake of the Jewish renewal and rebuilding that will be necessary after you destroy the temple, we'll need the leadership of Gamliel and his children. And so Vespasian granted that as well. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai never returned to Jerusalem. You can imagine, if he were to come back after he faked his own death, he'd immediately be a candidate for a real funeral. He went off to Yavne. He turned his back on Jerusalem, the city that treated him so well and that hosted the temple that he loved and where he served as a member of the Sanhedrin and under whose shade he taught for so many years. And he looked forward into the future, turning his back on the past. Not because it was an easy thing to do, but because it was a necessary thing to do. If Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai would succumb to the temptation of crying and mourning, then the Jewish people would have no future. The idea that we can survive as a people, even without a homeland, for nearly 2,000 years, is due to the foresight of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, who was able to foresee. He was able to visualize a people who had Torah and mitzvahs as their cohesive force rather than the soil of a ground and the Beit HaMikdash and its rituals. The soil of land and the Beit HaMikdash and its rituals. He indeed personified his master's title, Av L'Chachma, the father of wisdom and the father of generations, because the link of generations would have ended with the destruction of the temple if not for Rabbi Yochanan's foresight to figure a way to bring us forward post-destruction and not to become assimilated between the many nations that many Jews migrated into. 1 million Jews were killed during the Great War. 100,000 Jews were taken captive into Rome. Jews moved from there to Babylon. Jews moved into Europe. Jews moved into Asia Minor. Jews established communities all over the world. What kept us together? The Torah that was taught at Yavne. And Israel remained the center of Jewish spirit for a number of years because of Rabbi Yochanan's foresight. Many of his colleagues refused to join him because they saw in his action, they saw it as a treasonous action against our loyalty to the temple. But Rabbi Yochanan moved forward with all of 5 students. And later, after the temple was destroyed, after the people had no hope for the future, Rabbi Yochanan was in a position to provide it. These are the promises he extracted from Vespasian, established the Academy of Yavne, preserved the chain of Rabban Gamliel. But once in Yavne, after the temple was destroyed, Rabbi Yochanan enacted several crucial enactments. There were many areas of Jewish ritual that were centered around the Beit HaMikdash. And Rabbi Yochanan had to take those crucial and brave steps to turn the center of Israel back to Yavne. A simple example is one where the shofar is sounded on Shabbat only in the Beit HaMikdash. In the rest of Israel, the shofar was never sounded if Rosh Hashanah fell on Shabbat. After the temple was destroyed, Rabbi Yochanan enacted this new enactment whereby the shofar would be sounded in Yavne if Rosh Hashanah fell on Shabbat. This raised the ire of some of his colleagues, specifically the family of Beteira. But Rabbi Yochanan forged ahead and disregarded the disapproval of his colleagues. He realized he needed to raise the profile of Yavne if this experiment should become a successful endeavor. There were a number of other steps Rabbi Yochanan had to take to reduce the profile of Jerusalem and raise the profile of Yavne. In the eyes of many of his colleagues, this was treason. This was a break with the past. Rabbi Yochanan was concerned more with the link to the future. Rabbi Yochanan was the man of vision. He was the father of generations. Rabbi Yochanan did not simply view the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash impartially. The Talmud teaches us that he sat in Yavne with his students waiting to hear of news of its destruction. And as soon as that news came, Rabbi Yochanan, together with his students, tore their clothing, rent their clothing, sat on the floor and cried. And the Talmud tells us that Rabbi Yochanan later returned to Jerusalem to witness some of the suffering. Actually, this witnessing happened before he left Jerusalem. He saw one of the great matrons of Jerusalem. She was a very wealthy person. And she was walking outside seeking some kind of food because there was a famine in the city. And because she was so unaccustomed to literally walking in the streets through the dirty alleyways, she could not handle it and she fainted and fell into an illness from which she died. And during her period of final illness, she put all of her gold and silver out in the street and said, "You can all have my gold and silver, it doesn't feed me anyway." Rabbi Yochanan saw that and he cried. The Talmud records how he mentioned, how he pronounced upon this woman the verse in Deuteronomy, "Haraka becha v'ha anuga, the soft among you and the pampered, asher lo nisasa kafragla, that never experimented walking on the street, will be forced to take to the streets to seek out some food and nourishment." The Talmud tells us that Rabbi Yochanan one day saw a woman. She was picking little grains of barley out of the backside of an animal. And he said to her, "Who are you, my daughter?" And so she put on her shawl and she says, "Don't you recognize me? I am the daughter of Kalba Savua." He was one of the wealthiest people of Jerusalem, a devoted, loyal member of Rabbi Yochanan's academy. And he said to her, "I cannot believe what I see. What happened to your father's wealth? What happened to your father-in-law's wealth?" And of course, it had all gone in the destruction. Rabbi Yochanan cried and he said, "Only when Israel follows the will of God are they prosperous. And when we don't, look at our difficulties." And then she said to him, "Do you remember you signed on my ketubah?" And he said to her, "Indeed." He turned to his students, "I swear, in her ketubah she was worth thousands and thousands of golden coins, only from her own father's home." And then, of course, there was so much more wealth coming to her from her in-laws. And look at her today. She needs to pick barley grains out of the backside of an animal to survive. But still, despite the grief and the mourning, Rabbi Yochanan counseled a pragmatic, realistic approach to life. The temple is destroyed. We're going to enter into a period of exile. Let's not engage in false hopes. Let's realize what we're dealing with. One day, Rabbi Yochanan and his student Rabbi Yehoshua were walking in the ruins of Jerusalem, and Rabbi Yehoshua saw the Temple Mount destroyed, utterly destroyed. And Rabbi Yeshua started to cry and he said, "Woe upon us that we see the source of atonement completely destroyed. How shall we atone for our sins now?" Rabbi Yochanan said, "My son, al yeira levavcha, don't become saddened. Don't let your heart become saddened." Can you imagine counseling your student upon seeing the temple in destruction, telling your student, "Don't be sad. Yesh lanu kapara kimota. We have another source of atonement just as powerful as the temple. We have a replacement." Rabbi Yochanan's motto, there is another alternative method. And what is the other source of atonement? Gemilut chesed. Simply be kind to other people. And so Rabbi Yochanan counseled his students and trained them to look to the future. When things calmed down in Jerusalem and throughout the area, Rabban Gamliel was able to come out of hiding due to Rabbi Yochanan's diplomacy in extracting a promise of protection from Vespasian. Rabban Gamliel came to Yavne and Rabbi Yochanan did what the Bnei Beteira did for Hillel. He stepped down. Rabbi Yochanan, who was so great in stepping into the position when no one wanted him to do that, he was able to take upon himself the courage, the responsibility to do what needed doing. The same Rabbi Yochanan was able to step down and say the Jewish people are better served by Rabban Gamliel. He carries with him the prestige and the authority of the family of Hillel. He has the attitude and the perspective that Hillel bequeathed to his son and to his grandson, and he has the energy of youth. I'm an old man. Rabbi Yochanan died in 75. He died 5 years after the destruction of the temple. So he leaves Yavne. He recognizes with his prestige, now that he is revered rather than reviled for having created Yavne from the bottom. This is his baby. He realizes Rabban Gamliel would never be able to move into his own. So he leaves Yavne and moves to Bor Hayil, a little city in the Negev. And Rabban Gamliel, in one of the ironies of history, is referred to as Rabban Gamliel of Yavne. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, the creator of Yavne, is known just as Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. He moves to Bor Hayil and the Talmud tells us, if you're seeking true justice, go to Bor Hayil. Talmud also says, as we'll see next week, if you're seeking true justice, go to Lud. That's where Rabbi Eliezer and the next generation had his Bet Din, had his academy. Nevertheless, Rabbi Yochanan retained the position of Av Bet Din in Yavne. He was the supreme justice in Yavne, so he was Rabban Gamliel's right-hand man. He didn't live in Yavne, but he'd come in and out for occasions and for important debates and important votes so that he can lend his leadership and his skill and his experience to the Yavne endeavor. We mentioned Rabbi Yochanan witnessed the suffering from afar and he cried from Yavne. He counseled realistic thinking. He spoke to Rabbi Yeshua about charity as atonement and he generally advocated the study of Torah as the central force of Judaism in place of the temple which had been destroyed. His character. The Talmud, an incredible testimony of his character, the Talmud tells us. Rabbi Yochanan, just give me a moment to find it here. Me'olam lo sach sichat chulin. He never engaged in idle chatter. If it wasn't Torah related, Rabbi Yochanan would have none of it. He never went 4 cubit feet, 4 amos, without Torah, study, or tefillin. Even as he walked the streets, he studied Torah. No man ever came to the study hall before him. He was the first there every day. No man ever left after him. He never catnapped during the day in the academy. Never had a full nap, nor even a temporary nap. No one ever saw him sitting in the academy and not studying Torah. Every moment of his waking hours, he studied Torah. He never said, it's time to close the doors and go home, it's vacation time, it's August, it's the long weekend, May 2-4, he never said that. Only on Erev Pesach, when it was required of him to go to the temple to bring the Paschal Lamb, and of course, he didn't do that in Yavne after the destruction of the temple, and on Erev Yom Kippur, when it's required of us to eat the meal before the fast begins. No one ever opened the door for his students, but for him. Think of that. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, the great Rabbi Yochanan, insisted on opening the door for his students. No one ever said hello to him before he had managed to say hello to that person. And it didn't matter if this was a Jew or a non-Jew, a friend or a foe. That was Rabbi Yochanan's character. Rabbi Yochanan's primary student was Rabbi Eliezer, his premier pupil. And the Talmud says Rabbi Eliezer followed in his footsteps, learned from him not only his Torah, but also his character, just as Rabbi Yochanan learned that from Hillel. Rabbi Eliezer said, the final praise that is heaped upon Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Eliezer said that of himself. Rabbi Yochanan never said anything his teachers had not taught him. Rabbi Eliezer also followed in that footsteps and hadn't ever said anything his teachers had not taught him. So they retained the link with tradition and never went off on original tangents. Rabbi Yochanan taught, if you've studied a lot of Torah, don't boast about it. After all, that was your purpose for creation. One of his other great students was Rabbi Yehoshua ben Hanania. Rabbi Yehoshua was once asked, if I want to study Greek philosophy, when am I permitted to study? So Rabbi Yehoshua said, you have to study at a time that's not day and not night. Because the Torah says, V'hagita ba yomam v'layla. You must study the Torah day and night. In other words, Rabbi Yehoshua said, there is no time for anything but for Torah. Learning from his own teacher, who had such an incredible ethic of Torah study, and never wasted even a moment of his time. The Mishnah teaches of his five students, they are Rabbi Eliezer ben Hyrcanus, Rabbi Yehoshua ben Hanania, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, Rabbi Shimon ben Netanel, and Rabbi Yossi. And there are many others. Briefly, Rabbi Hanina ben Dosa once came to study with Rabbi Yochanan. And Rabbi Yochanan's son fell ill. And we'll see in a moment that son died. But during this period of illness, Rabbi Yochanan asked Rabbi Hanina to pray for his son's health. Rabbi Hanina put his head between his knees and he prayed, and the son recovered. And Rabbi Yochanan said, Ben Zakkai could have sat with his head between his knees all day long and no one would have paid attention. So his wife said, what, is Hanina greater than you? And he said, no. Hanina is like the king's valet. He's there all the time. He's in and out. He can ask the king anything at any time. He's God's valet. I am a minister in God's court. I have to have an audience to get in. And I need an appointment. And that's why I asked Hanina to pray for me. I want to close by stating that Reb Yochanan ben Zakkai, in all of his courageous leadership, lived a very, very difficult life. His son, as we mentioned, was ill and ultimately passed. His nephew, as we mentioned, became the leader of the hot-headed radicals who opposed Reb Yochanan's view. And his star pupil, Rabbi Elazar ben Arach, ultimately left the academy and forgot much of his Torah learning. He was a very lonely man in his personal life. Just briefly, when his son died, his students came to comfort him. And one student said, listen, King David lost his son, and he overcame it. Surely the rabbi can too. And another said, Job lost his children, and he overcame it. And a third said, Aaron lost two sons. And a fourth said, Adam lost his son, Cain. So surely you too can overcome it. And Rabbi Yochanan said, what are you doing? It's not enough. I have my own troubles. You have to remind me of the sorrow of King David, of Adam, of Job, and of Aaron. So Rabbi Elazar ben Arach said, Rabbi, imagine a king gave you an expensive, valuable item for safekeeping. You'd be worried every day, hoping that the item is still safe for when the king comes to collect it. God gave you a child. You succeeded in giving the child back before he had tasted the taste of sin. You taught him Torah and you returned him in perfect state. If you see it from God's point of view, there's no reason to cry. Rabbi Yochanan said, Ben Arach, he said, the son of Arach. He said, you've comforted me the way ordinary people comfort, but I'll accept it anyway. Give me my walking stick and my bag. We're going back to Yavne. After Rabbi Yochanan passed away, Many of the students went back to Yavne from Bor Chaim to learn with Rabban Gamliel. Rabbi Elazar ben Arach decided he was going off to an estate he had by the waterfront, where it was very comfortable and very warm, and the Talmud says there were fine wines in that area. And Rabbi Elazar said, I'll take a vacation. I was with my master for so many years. It was so intense. I was in Yavne when everyone reviled us. I'll take a break. Well, he went to his estate and no one came after him. So he wanted to go off and visit with his friends, and his wife said, well, wait a second. Who needs whom? Your friends need your scholarship. You're the great star pupil. You don't have to run after them. So he stayed. And the Talmud tells us that he ultimately forgot much of what he had learned. And his colleagues had to pray for him so that his knowledge would be restored, and it was. So Rabbi Elazar ben Arach came back to the academy and he taught one should always pursue the Torah and not wait for the Torah to follow you. Because your friends are the ones that will preserve the Torah in your hand, and never trust your own wisdom. So Rabbi Yochanan passes away, a man whose son had died, whose nephew had turned on him, and whose star pupil had left him, and he didn't live to see his star pupil's return. And on his deathbed, his students come to visit him. And they see him crying. And they ask him, my master, why are you crying? And he said, if I were to appear before a king whose wrath is not eternal and whose punishment is not eternal, I would shiver from fear. I would tremble. If now I am to appear before a king whose wrath will be eternal, whose punishments might be eternal, how can I not cry? There are two paths before us. One is good and one is not. And I don't know which way I'll be taken. I don't know where they will lead me. Some say that this is a reflection of Rabbi Yochanan's constant original path. He always took a chance and relied on his own judgment. But only history would prove him right. And God, of course, knows the future. And Rabbi Yochanan on his deathbed says, I don't know where they will lead me. Others say, no, Rabbi Yochanan was simply so concerned all the time with serving others that he had no time to worry about himself. And on his deathbed, he suddenly realized, so where do I stand? Where do I hope? Am I on the good path or am I on the bad path? I don't know, and I'm crying. And the student said to him, Rabbi, teach us the ways of life so that we too may merit the world to come. And he blessed them that they may it be the will of God that you fear God as much as you fear an ordinary mortal. And they said, is that all? And he said, my sons, trust me. When a human being commits a sin, what does he or she say? I hope no one's watching. They never think that God is always watching. Just before he died, he asked his students to bring forward a chair because Chizkiyahu, the great king of Yehuda, the soul of Chizkiyahu, came to be with Rabbi Yochanan as he passed on and accompany him to the world to come. Indeed, the Zohar teaches when a tzaddik, when a righteous person passes on, God sends the souls of righteous people who came before him or her to greet them and to take them back to heaven. This brings us to the end of tonight's presentation on Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai and his master Hillel. It is clear to us now that Hillel's vision for Rabbi Yochanan to be the father of generations was in fact lived up to by Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, and we today continue to be a people of the book because Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai had the vision and the courage to make it happen. Thank you everyone for coming.